makes most of the workforce eligible in the industry, the manufacturing part of the workforce. It's potentially a large revenue impact, but again, I'll point out that the total payments over the last 12 months have been $2 million for the industry as a whole, so that would effectively cap the revenue impact.
And this have a carry forward component for the credit?
Yes. On I believe 479 does. I know 479 has a carry forward.
Look at this. Yeah. Mr. Chair, it does. Under Section 2, Sub 5, any tax credit otherwise allowable under this section that is not used may be carried forward to the next succeeding year.
Oh, wait, well, there's one year carry forward.
Actually, it's a 5-year carry
forward.
5-year,
yes. Okay. We have sign up for testimony. Mr. Yates. Whomever else. You please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my name is Ken Yates. I'm Vice President of Government Affairs for the Northwest Food Processors Association, a position I've held for the last 14 years, and before that I was a legislative assistant in this body in the 1980s and trying to grow old gracefully with everyone else in this process. Thank you for your time today. What I'd like to do today, and I've got two real people with me from the industry who run their companies and would directly benefit from this legislation and can speak, I think, more persuasively than I to the competitive issues confronting them globally and domestically and the need for this legislation. But let me give you a broad overview, and I'd be happy to, rather than give you a long monologue, happy to engage in any questions you may have. First, the food manufacturing industry in Oregon, in fact throughout the Northwest, is the third largest manufacturing employer in the state and in the three-state region. There are essentially three legs to the economic stool in Oregon: high-tech, wood products, and food manufacturing. And those are three stools of the economic structure in our state. This leg is troubled, and it needs some tightening, and that's what we're here to talk to you about. I'd like to bring your attention to several benchmarks that are in your packet. These are the yellow sheets in your packet. They should be on top on the right-hand side of your packet as you open it. These benchmarks have been done annually for us since 2000 by our economist, Bruce Krengoober of Global Wise Incorporated. And the benchmarks are set at $1 million in sales or 20 or more full-time equivalents. And so these are folks who avail themselves of services of our association. We represent most of these folks. And in Oregon, we have 179 companies processing food and beverages in the state at this time. Of those, about 65 process fruit, potato, and other vegetable products. And you'll see that in the third box on that first page of the benchmark sheet. And again, that's yellow. On the second page of that sheet, you'll see some additional statistics. In terms of economic contributions by the industry, value added is very important. That's what our industry does. We add value to farm products. And we added nearly $2 billion in just value to farm gate products in 2003, the last year we had statistics available. That's not total sales, which is a much higher figure, but about $2 billion, just under $2 billion in value added, nearly $500 million annually in payroll, and the industry employs nearly 17,000 folks in the industry year-round, most of whom are full-time in their employment. On the next page of your benchmarks are some trends that we've been able to to perceive over between the 2000 and 2003 period when we had statistics available. You'll notice in the state of Idaho, employment in the food manufacturing sector declined 4.1% during that period. The decline in Oregon in employment in the food sector, food manufacturing sector, was 15.3%. There's a similar statistic in Washington, nearly 15%. In terms of payroll, in Idaho in food manufacturing, payroll increased 9.5% during that period. In Oregon, the decline, again, this was a decline, was 11%. And then decline in Washington in payroll during that period was 5.4%. These are trends that our economists put together. There has been no growth in terms of capacity in the industry or new manufacturing plants to speak of, with a few exceptions. There have been a number of plant closures in the industry. That brings me to my next document, which is a yellow sheet, again, on the right-hand side of your packet. A green sheet. It should be right after the yellow sheet. Going colorblind, along with losing my hair, I think. The green sheet is an updated version of our plant closure list. It now includes layoff numbers under the Warren Act for the plant closures over the last 5 years. These were provided to us by the employment economist at the employment department, and you will see that that goes on for three full pages of plant closures and major layoffs. There are two very recent ones, actually three very recent ones I want to bring to your attention. In November, the J.R. Simplot Company, which is a major nationwide food manufacturer of potato products, closed its doors in Hermiston with the loss of over 600 jobs. And that is a devastating economic impact to Umatilla County. And then again, just very recently in January, Amalgamated Sugar in Nissa, Oregon, had announced it's closing its doors. 200 employees will be laid off. And then just 2 weeks ago, the Treetop facility, which is a major Northwest name brand, will close its facility in Milton Freewater, laying off 75 full-time employees. We need to reverse this trend, and that's what we'd like to talk to you about today. Finally, on that side of your packet is a rather thick economic impact study. Just gave you the plant closure list. This is an in-depth economic case study of the impacts of the J.R. Simplot facility closing in Hermiston, Oregon. And I would direct your attention to the executive summary on page 3. That Simplot facility in Hermiston provides 680 jobs with a total payroll of $15.4 million. And they provide annually employer-paid benefits of $5.5 million, including $2.8 million in health care benefits for their workers. 90% of these jobs were held in by residents of Umatilla County. The company purchased $9.4 million in potatoes from growers in the area, both Umatilla and Morrow counties. The company purchases another $9 million products and services from over 60 Umatilla County businesses. And the company pays nearly $1 million in property taxes to support local schools. This facility is a major industrial asset. We expect that someone will pick it up, but at a much, much lower level of economic activity. Under one scenario, if it's reopened as a light manufacturing facility with 100 employees, the net loss will still be 1,000 jobs, both direct and indirect, to Umatilla County and Morrow County. Total labor income loss will be $26 million. Total output loss, $151 million. In the second scenario, which we think is likely, the facility might be converted into a wholesale distribution operation employing 200 persons in that area. And again, a net job loss of 945. A total labor income loss of almost $22 million, and total output loss of $145 million. So something may go in there. Nothing has yet, but there is no question it'll be at a much, much lower level of economic activity. That is my overview of the economic situation in the state and region. on the food manufacturing sector. The legislation we have before you is specifically and very narrowly targeted towards the most distressed sector. And not all sectors are distressed. But the fruit and vegetable sector, which has been the core commodity business in the industry in Oregon for 100 years, is the one that we're seeking some relief for. These bills, Senate Bill 365 and Senate Bill 479, are part of a larger state, regional, economic cluster development strategy where we free capital for critical technology and productivity investments, investments in our workforce, and investments in research and development for the innovation and creation of new products. These investments are necessary if we're going to compete in a global environment. Right now, there is a huge overcapacity in this industry of production, and that's not from domestic competitors. That is from international competitors in China and South America. And I'll be brief, Mr. Chair. In order to, our competitors are no longer down the street here in Oregon or even in other regions of the country, although that continues to be a competitive factor. Our real competitors are overseas. And we're going to have to preserve historic competitive advantages, low cost and available water, low cost and available energy, in order to compete. Because the freight rates kill us to Asia and domestically across the Mississippi River. Always have. These advantages really aren't advantages. They've just leveled the playing field and allowed us to compete for the last 100 years. We're going to have to preserve those and find new competitive advantages in order to move forward. Our association, in partnership with the state of Oregon, in Idaho, in Washington, and with the federal government, is putting together an economic development strategy that will lay a roadmap for the next 10 to 20 years on what we need to do. These two bills are the first step. They're symbolic in the partnership that we are seeking with state government. Certainly regional government, federal government will be a part of that. Higher education will be a part of that. But again, our competitors are no longer in Oregon. They're overseas. And these are the tools we need. I'm fond of telling our members, in conclusion, Mr. Chairman, that government can help you, government can hurt you, and government can kill you. But they have to save themselves. And believe me, I have been through plants all over this state in the last year. I visited over 19 of them just this summer. And there is incredible innovation and creativity going on. New products are being developed. What we're asking for is a little cost relief so those investments can continue and be accelerated in our workforce, in technology, so we can be more productive, and in innovation and creation of new products and the identification of niche markets. This is the opening shot in that great effort. We can't afford to lose as a state or as a region, and I'd be happy to entertain your questions if you have any. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Yates. Very provocative overview of what has happened to agriculture and value-added industry in Oregon over the last many years. It's been something I've been involved with, as you know, and it hurts me to see what has happened. And, so, questions from the committee. I see another gentleman that's involved in that. Agricultural processing, sitting down on the other end here. How's your part of the industry affected, Senator George?
Well, as Dick was talking about this, I was thinking about something we recently bumped into, and that is, it isn't just the competition that we have worldwide, and it isn't, you know, a lot of things that we may be facing that are they're very significant. But we're facing issues like, for example, we have a facility that was going to be, and this is at the base, most basic level of processing, was going to be moved from one place in a county to another place in the county. And so everything was taken down, ready to move to the new location, only to find out that the buildings didn't meet current code requirements and they couldn't be placed as ag exempt. And so what we're talking about is we have just continued to pile on costs on top of folks that are trying to adapt to the new realities of the market. And if we don't get some sort of relief for that, because, I mean, this might be significant for their survival if, in fact, they have to go out and purchase something new because the new requirements wouldn't allow them to reassemble their old equipment. So I think it's time for some help. I had the experience about 2 weeks ago to drive out to an area, part of it included Savis Island, and we drove around and we looked at what used to be the most beautiful, productive source of fruit and vegetables for the processors, and all I had to do, because you know you remember what it was once, is to look at the farmsteads and realize how that economy has faded away from them, and you didn't see prosperity anymore, even though they're sitting on some of the most beautiful farmland there is out there. So this is a major problem, and as we heard when Marty Brantley came in and spoke to the committee, about a year ago, and he pointed out that the number of major processors that we've lost, you know, in the Salem area, and this issue of water is such an important thing. We may need to figure out a way to subsidize that, because it's a cost killer to a food processor, because it takes so much water in the cleaning process. So I guess that's not a question. That's more like a here's where we are.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator George, if I may follow up. The facility that you used to be the field manager for, Flavorland Foods, is now New Season Foods in Forest Grove. And this is an example of a commodity processor that switched over, developed a new product, made investments in technology, and they're doing a value-added product, a dehydrated corn product that is used in soup that is very, very popular in Japan, and that is entirely an export business now to Japan. So these are the kind of things that are occurring. And Senator George, I want to thank you for your very early interest in this issue. You called me this summer, and I think we traded voicemails and had a conversation. But it is international competition, but it's also competition in other states. I'm not here to pound my head against a brick wall called minimum wage indexing. We're not asking for a relaxation of environmental regulations or any of those things that our competitors don't deal with, but we do. And these two gentlemen will talk about the differences in wages and those cost pressures. We're here asking for some cost relief in the way of these tax credits. We're asking for a partnership with the state of Oregon to survive and to prosper. And I'm convinced that we can do this. For 100 years, the economic cluster in Oregon has been agriculture and value-added food processing. In Hollywood, it's making movies. In Detroit, it's making cars. This is our cluster, together with wood products, and because of the leadership and foresight of this legislature 20 years ago, when I was a much younger person as a legislative assistant, high-tech. You know, we're asking for a similar partnership. Not nearly as much money as high tech, but we are asking for a similar partnership, and we want to work with you. And believe me, if you give us the help that we need, we will do the job. Thank you for your comments.
Mr. Chair.
Question, yes.
Thank you. So, Ken, where are y'all with the governor's office? I mean, I think this green sheet gets everyone's attention. I remember it a month ago when we were in Hood River, now again today. And I know you're working on a package of amendments to these bills, and I don't know if Katie's in. I don't see Katie.
Actually, Jerry Gardner, who's Economic Development, Ag Development for the Department, will be testifying. The Department of Ag, without stealing Jerry's thunder, is very supportive of the industry. We have established a partnership with Governor Kulongoski. That partnership has already borne some fruit in other areas. We're committed to working with this administration. And you will know from my background that I'm a bipartisan guy, and this is a bipartisan issue. And we're working with this governor, and we want to work with both chambers in this legislature to get something done. I know that amendments are being drafted. I've not seen those. We are reaching out to various constituent groups that may be affected. But, again, until we get the details, I can't really comment on that. But we are working with the administration on those.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll save this for the Agriculture Department, but we're wrapping up, and I will say that for the Agriculture Department, but we are wrapping up our work, and so are starting to wrap up our work, and so we would need amendments.
Yes, sir. I agree. I'm ready to get to work, too.
Thank you. All right. You have a comment?
I do.
Yes.
Thank you, Senator Starr.
I guess one of the things, Ken, is one of the perspectives I'm taking in all these types of tax credits, no matter what industry, what field, is having buy-in by the industry to actually be committed to the communities. And I understand that we're looking at an industry that has shown that dedication, commitment. But would you have any opinion or statements as to whether we had some type of what I refer to as clawback provisions that would require that once the tax credits are given, the assistance has been given, that the industry is required to stay in place for X number of months, years, whatever it may be, and if they fail to do so, it's just safe. Because some of these companies now are not here. I mean, if they make an economic decision to close, let's say, Foster Poultry down in Criswell, and they decide to move all their people into Washington State, I think is where they ship them, those jobs to, that they be required to pay back to the state the investment that we've given them. And I'm wondering what your position would be on that.
Thank you, Senator Prochansky. It's a very good question. I'm aware, you know, Foster Farms is a member of this organization. You'll notice that we're not here asking for relief for the poultry industry.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing relatively well. That was a business decision based on factors that I'm not privy to. This is focused. These bills are focused primarily on fruit and vegetable, on a bakery facility in Portland that's on the bubble, and on the fish industry, which is also in a very precarious position along the Pacific coast. What has been remarkable about these plant closures and layoffs is oftentimes they will occur after they've bought the facility just a couple years before, or maybe made significant investments, and for whatever economic reasons they were not able to make it work. But there is a commitment that demonstrates a very strong commitment to grow this industry and to move it forward. I don't think I could bind the hands of the industry in terms of, you know, of giving money back. I think we can certainly talk about reporting and disclosure of unemployment and benefits and those kinds of things. I think that's good public policy. It's a public policy that we supported and agreed to in a similar package in Washington State that is moving through that process as we speak today. But I couldn't make a commitment that that a plant wouldn't close, because sometimes that is governed by forces that are frankly beyond the industry's control or a company's control, and we've seen that again and again. And the idea here is to get them the relief, get the investments in place, so and this includes workforce and technology and increased productivity, so we can compete. We're competing against folks around the world that make more, that make product, paying their people in an hour or a day or a week what we pay in an hour. And that is a very difficult competitive environment. But it is one that we can compete in. An example of that is another facility in your district, Garden Valley Corporation. They were just a simple dehydrator, and now they're doing all kinds of value-added products, microwavable products and ready-to-eat products. And they are competing because they have found, they've innovated and created new products, found markets for them, made the capital investments, and I think they're here to stay for a long time. Those are the companies that we need to move forward with. But I don't think I could commit to a reimbursement, if you will, of the tax expenditure. As with any investment, it's not risk-free. But I can tell you, this industry is here to stay. They're committed to stay. They can and will survive. And we're just looking for a partnership to help us do it. And, you know, I think we can look at, there is a sunset in the bill, so that limits any downside. And we're certainly willing to talk about disclosure and reporting. Does that answer your question?
It answers my question. It's not the answer I care to hear. I think throughout all of it, we've got 355 plus tax expenditures in the state. We've refused to continue. We've continued to refuse to look at them. This industry, I clearly understand, and it appears that of all the ones I've seen, is probably the most worthy of this type of investment without having the callback. But when you have forces outside of the state that make economic decisions that impact Oregonians, their lives, their move to a community to be part of it, and then they basically make the decision it's more economical to go either to another state or another country, it just seems to me that there should be some buy-in. And if they want to make that decision, they also realize there's an economic downturn that they're going to have to pay back to the state. Colorado's done this. I believe other communities such as Austin, Texas has done this. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily in the food industry, but overall. And I just think that we need to make sure that if we're going to help in joining this partnership, that partnership is two ways.
Well, and let me speak to that point, Senator, because you make a good and valid point. I'm not here representing companies that are going to take the money and run. I'm here representing the companies that need the investment, need the partnership to stay. And this industry has made a tremendous community commitment for 100 years. They have put through school generations of high school and college students. They're providing opportunity for immigrants in these plants at family wage jobs every day. They are one of the biggest contributors to the Oregon Food Bank. The Oregon Food Bank opposed us on minimum wage indexing. And so, you know, that wasn't, you know, I would have liked to have seen them be a little bit more supportive of the industry on that issue. But again, we're not here to fight that. You know, our folks are paid well above the minimum wage. Typical entry level is $10 or $12 an hour for a low-skilled position. We're asking for tax relief in order to make high-tech investments so people can have higher-skilled and higher-paying jobs in the industry. There's going to be a reduction in employment in this industry, but the jobs that will remain will be higher-paid and higher-skilled. That is a commitment to the industry. And you'll see in the Simplot study, again and again, I wish I could bring all my members so they could sit here and tell you all of the civic and charitable and community groups that they support in this state. That commitment has been made. We've never been here with an ask before. This has been a defensive lobby for the entire 14 years I've run the program, and this is the first time we've asked for a tax incentive, tax stimulus, in order to be competitive and to move forward. There's been a tremendous community commitment by this industry. They have walked their talk. They really have. And, I think we can talk about disclosure, reporting, and accountability because we think that's good public policy. I'd like to have a side conversation and learn more about what other states are doing. So I don't want to completely close the door on that. But I would need to know more, and I would need to talk to our folks.
Mr. Yates, I appreciate your comments. And again, I hope you don't take these personally.
Absolutely not, sir.
This is a policy decision for the state regarding any type of tax expenditure, and it's not focused exclusively toward the food processors. This is just something I've been asking for any individuals that are coming before us. And so I definitely would like to have that dialogue continue.
I would enjoy it, and I don't take your questions or comments personally. I want to work with you, Senator. Like I said, this is a bipartisan organization, and we want to work with all parties to get to where we need to go. We just need to do it quickly this session. We're running out of time.
Senator George, then we need to get on with our testimony.
I'll move quickly. there's something, Mr. Yates, I was looking through the information, and I didn't see it mentioned, and if you have it, help me out on this. But I've noticed something over the last few years that is just a little bit on the frightening side, and that is, and it's relative to this idea that this is going to cost state government rather than this being an income generator, because I have seen the small manufacturer who repairs and builds some of the equipment that goes into our processors disappear.
Yes, sir.
I've found some of the suppliers out there that used to supply. I have a friend of mine that's a salesman for Empire Rubber. He tells me in many places his sales have gone from millions of dollars to zero because we've lost these processors. So, I mean, I think there's a major plus side on this, and I worry about the fact, I look at the city of Newburgh, which is actually Senator Starr's district now, and we lost a small manufacturer, and we're seeing FMC thinking about moving. I think about down the Eugene area with Miller Dehydrator that, you know, it has a lot of customers in California for some of the specialized pistachio equipment they make. Mm-hmm. They used to supply all of the folks that were in the nut industry, in Oregon and other products. person's going to make a decision if there is nothing here for them to supply. In other words, local customers. But they're going to move where the bulk of their customers are. They will pack up and move. And as they pointed out, there's advantages to making that move to another state to do your manufacturing. And so we're seeing these folks that are in the supply industry taking a look and saying, you know, I think if this continues to diminish this production, we're going to move. Help me with that, because that's what I'm seeing, and I don't know if that's correct or not.
You have it, Mr. Chairman, and Senator George, you have hit the nail on the head. We're talking about a regional economic cluster. We're talking about growers. We're talking about the supplier companies you just mentioned. And we represent all the suppliers, too. We represent 350 suppliers to this industry. If the core fruit and vegetable processing industry, if fishing, if the bakery goes away, their suppliers go away too. Agriculture is still the largest economic sector in the state of Oregon. And if you don't have the processing and value-added component, that is severely, severely damaged. We can't survive without our growers, and our growers can't survive without us. And you're absolutely right. We have got to preserve this economic cluster through investments, or it's going to be in China. And, you know, I've made this point before, but if this country believes that our foreign dependence on energy is a national security issue, and it is, wait till we are a net importer of food. And that is coming in 10, 20, 30 years, maybe sooner. And we have got to have a domestic food industry. It is a vital survival issue, and everyone's going to have to do their part. And as I said, we will do the job. We just need to partner with state government. We're willing to talk and be reasonable, but we do need to get something going quickly. Our members are looking for a commitment, even if it's symbolic, and I think these bills are a little more than symbolic, frankly. This is not a big ask, and if I may be so bold. But it's a start, and it's certainty that we have a partner in the state of Oregon, and similar to the partnerships we're trying to establish at other levels of government and with other institutions, private and public.
Thank you. Let's hear from industry folks here that are involved and on the front line. King, are you going first? Or
it doesn't make a difference either one.
King or George?
I guess I'll begin then, Ken. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Josh Reynolds. I'm Vice President and General Manager of Grain Company. I know since I shaved this morning, I look like I was just promoted from the internship program at Grain Company, but I've been with the business for about 9 years and smack in the middle of my 30s. We were founded in 1908 here in Oregon and have been in the cherry processing business for about 70 years as the company evolved over the time. Just as a point of order, I'm also on the Oregon Sweet Cherry Commission, but today I'm testifying on behalf of my fellow cherry processors, including Oregon cherry growers, yes, my arch competitor, but also a fellow within the Northwest Food Processor Association, and as a board member of the association. Grain Company today is a $75 million business, still based here in Oregon. My family does have an ownership stake. I represent the second generation of management within the company. I work with my brother closely. And work for my father, although we are a private enterprise with other stakeholders involved. We produce and process primarily maraschino cherries, which hopefully you're all putting on top of your sundaes or in the evening in a Manhattan, and also chocolate-covered cherries, and we have a significant market share in the retail segment in the United States. So whether it's Western Family or Kroger brand on in your refrigerator or Safeway, it probably came out of one of my plants. In Oregon here, we have two plants, one in Dayton, a brining and receiving station for cherries and pitting, where we've also made investments for our own orchard activity, where we have 80 acres. Otherwise, we buy from growers throughout the Willamette Valley and in Washington, a total of 16 million pounds farm gate weight out of the Northwest last year. We also have a processing facility in Forest Grove, Oregon, where we actually turn the cherries into a maraschino or glacé, glazed fruit, the kind of thing that goes into the Harry and David fruitcake, which I highly recommend. Our total Oregon payroll is about $6 million, and our Oregon value of production is $25 million. But within our company, we have a significant debate going on that's been going on for about 5 years and really intensified in the last few years, and that is very simply, where should we locate our business? Where should we be moving our processing? Where should we have our senior management established, our corporate office? And I'd like to talk really more directly about opportunities for my company of why we're making a comparison within the United States and less about moving overseas. Because I have another processing facility on the western side of Michigan, which now represents 60% of my overall production. It was a plant that we built in the mid-70s to be close to the cherry production in Michigan, which combined with the Northwest and California represent the largest growing areas for cherries. We made an acquisition in 1992 to get into the chocolate-covered cherry business, the Queen Anne brand from Hershey, and we decided to locate it in Michigan. And that has been our, frankly, our engine of growth of, or investment really for the last 10 years. Well, why is that? Just on a straight comparison basis, Oregon is at a disadvantage versus other regions within the United States. Our hourly production wage benefit in total, and we do pay our union workforce an entry level that starts above $10 and fully loaded because we want to provide health care for our employees, ranges from $15 to $17, but there's a 9% differential between what I'm paying in Michigan, lower than here in Oregon. That is related to the entry level, the index for minimum wage and how that pushes the overall salary for our union workforce. Some of my key inputs are more expensive here on the West Coast, aside from transportation, just moving goods, but glass, what I pack my fruit in, is much higher, ranging from 5 to 30%. And energy as a component of that, but really it's proximity to the supplier base. So as Senator George, you mentioned, as the suppliers go away, as they concentrate their activity in other clusters around the United States, we lose out here in the Northwest. Corn syrup, a key ingredient, largely produced in the Midwest. That's a 17% cost increase for me to ship that out here to Oregon and add it to my product and then ship it to another part of the United States. In addition, in Michigan, we as a company have been a beneficiary of what was called the Agricultural Renaissance Zones, something Governor Engler in Michigan put in place, I think it was about the year 2000. And that has provided us a 15-year property tax exemption on our plant, our facility in Michigan, which is significant. There is, I'll mention, an exception for school levies, which I think is great public policy. So we are still contributing to the infrastructure and the investment of the schools in our immediate community. But it has allowed us to make significant investments, our largest ever, which was about 5 years ago when we installed robots to pick and place our chocolate-covered cherries, and that was a $3 million investment, which is substantial for a company of our size. We partially did that. Well, in large part because of the beneficiary of that policy, the Agriculture Renaissance Zones. And so this has driven our capital expenditures since that time of Michigan versus Oregon. So why am I still sitting here today? Why is my home still in Oregon rather than just pulling up roots and moving to Michigan right away? Well, other than have you been to Western Michigan in the winter, my family, myself, my brother, my father, we love this state. We want to build a business here in Oregon. My father is a little bit more transient. He might be willing to pack up and move to Grand Rapids, and I am clinging to the soil of Portland and where I want to raise my family and work with the growers here in Oregon who are among the best, if not the best in the world, what they can create. Tonight we have our annual grower meeting. I look forward to that every year because I always learn something. They have a lot to teach us. I don't want to de-emphasize, or I can't overemphasize our desire to build a business here in Oregon. And this is something that my brother, who's 2 years older than I, really share as partners in the business as representing possibly the future of the food processing industry, not ourselves, but representing our colleagues within our generation to be able to build a business here in Oregon. Yes, our Michigan plant's always going to be there, but we want to find new ways to create value-added products out of our Forest Grove production facility. We've had a little success in the last year, taking some things beyond cherries, some other fruits. You can grow almost anything in Oregon, particularly on the fruit side. And if we get a little bit of marginal relief, incremental, really a signal from the state that we want to keep you here within our borders and investing, it goes a long way. There's a big signal over there in Michigan to do so. I'd like to see the same here in Oregon and be able to combat my shareholders or my boss on where my kids are going to go to school, where I'm going to live, and reinvest my energies and resources into the food processing industry here in Oregon. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions? Let's move on. And King, would you...
Good morning, Senators. My name is King Bradenkamp. I'm co-owner of Scenic Fruit Company in Gresham, Oregon. My grandfather founded the company in 1931, so next year we'll be celebrating 75 years in business. And in 2006 we'll be celebrating 75 years in business. A brief overview of our company is we have gross sales of approximately $12 to $15 million. We sell to companies like Sara Lee, Breyers Ice Cream, Haagen-Dazs, and other various large corporations throughout the United States. Scenic Fruit Company pays out approximately $2 million in payroll and $6 to $8 million to our 200-plus growers located throughout the Willamette Valley. We purchase around 1 to 1.5, as Mr. George put out, our Senator George put out, the fact that we do put a lot of money. We buy sugar from Amalgamated Sugar in Portland. We buy buckets from Lettick and St. John's. We purchase liquid nitrogen and cardboard, all Boise Cascade, which is located here in Salem. So our industry, as Ken has alluded, puts a lot of money back into it. Very, very true what your point was there. I want to explain what's happened to our industry. Since in the early 80s and early 90s is when we started to see, as Ken mentioned too, the global markets. We're finding much more difficult dealing with the foreign countries. 5 years ago, I was in Chile, and as Ken said, I asked the person what they're paying there, and it's about $8 a day, about what we're paying per hour for an employee. We have seen China's taken away some of our exports. We've been selling strawberries and blueberries to Japan, not so much in the blueberries, but definitely in the strawberries. We used to sell a lot of strawberries to China, to Japan, but now it's slipping away from us because of the cheaper labor in China. Another thing that, as he's mentioned also, was the fact that I find it frustrating. We're also a co-packer of polybagging, and for 2 years I've tried to, at the Western Frozen Food Show, tried to get business from another private polybag person. And first year I really sharpened my pencil, thought I gave him a good price to custom pack this for him in his private label. It's about 1.5 million pounds that I could bring to the state of Oregon. Said you're too high. So, and this person I know, he really said he'd like to give me the business. But I went back in February to the Western Frozen Food in San Francisco, and I got down really, sharpened my pencil up to try and get that business. But he said, you're still too high. And basically it boiled down to, in the polybagging, a lot of that is your labor cost and the cost to do the bagging. And I lost business to a company out of New York. And I've also had problems with Kansas City. So as he's alluded to, the same thing. We're finding we need to have a leveler playing field for our in order for us to generate business. That 1.5 million pounds would also include trucking, would be outside cold storages here in Oregon, and it would create jobs for people at my plant. 2004 was one of the worst years we had in the history of our 74 years in business. These two bills would definitely help, and it still wouldn't level the playing field, but it would at least help. In the last 10 years, we've seen time and time again fruit and vegetable packers close their doors in Oregon. I guarantee you that if something isn't done, this industry to help us, that there'll be more going, and it could even be my company. With the state of our industry, the state our industry's in right now, it's our machinery's probably worth 10 to 20% on the dollar with what we purchased it for, and it makes it very difficult to go out and purchase new, more efficient equipment when you don't see a rosy future down the road. The good news is the berries, as you've probably been hearing, has been getting excellent press on the health benefits. Our sales, the demand for berries are going up. However, we're still in a world market competing against selling against world markets and even other states, as Michigan is the minimum wage is lower there. A lot of blueberries are grown there. So in June of 2005, we're going to have a worldwide berry symposium held at Oregon State University touting the health benefits of berries. And all this publicity is definitely increasing the demand for people are buying more berries. The blueberries just been in a very good position right now. But we still need, again, to be able to level the playing field so that our company can continue to grow. I'd like to ask you to please vote yes on these two bills that our industry here in Oregon will be on a much lower playing field with other states in the United States. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Compelling testimony, folks. I appreciate you bringing this to us, and thank you very much. We've got several other witnesses, and time is running.
Just one comment, Mr. Chair.
Please.
The gentleman, I forget your name, but we definitely asked questions in Hood River, mentioned that it would be nice to see a signal from the state. And it is my feeling, just speaking for the Senate, that you will see that signal given.
Thank you.
And we just need to work with the governor's office in a very fast fashion to actually get these into shape that we can move them. But if something doesn't come forth in the next week or two, then we'll just look at the original bills and move those.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I just have one question. King, when I was out at your plant a couple of years ago, you were processing, I think, strawberries from Poland. Is that right? You know, the
frozen cereal. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Are you still in?
We're doing slicing the bananas for Cheerios. They're doing internally now with the strawberries, but we also just picked up about 6 months ago started dicing bananas for Gerber baby food, where they're freeze drying that, and we do the tempering and dicing, and then we ship it down to Oregon freeze dry.
Okay.
And we're doing many things to try and cover our overhead.
Right.
Primarily, we're fresh packer. That's where we make usually our profit, but last year was not at all good. But we do all polybagging and other things in the off season to help offset our overhead.
I mean, and just as an observation, I mean, when Scenic was, you know, they found that at that time that the cost and everything of bringing strawberries, if you can think of it, Gresham, you bring strawberries from Poland, but you know they could process them there and do that cheaper than you know what used to be the strawberries right across their street.
Exactly. The first year they bought Northwest strawberries, but then they just found out that it was cheaper to bring them in from Poland.
I mean, so that's kind of just an amazing thing. You know, you can bring stuff in from Poland, process and make that work, but the guy across the street from seeing it can't grow them at a price to make that happen. And I think that just kind of shows, again, just how, the global marketplace is, you know, hurting us internally, and that anything we can do to help be competitive is really going to be helpful. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We need to move on. Jerry Gardner, please. And Don Schellenberger, why don't you come on up? And Joe Schweinhardt.
Chairman Deckert, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jerry Gardner. I'm the Business Development Manager at the Oregon Department of Agriculture. My offices are located at the Food Innovation Center up in Portland. The Oregon Department of Agriculture is not taking a position on either Senate Bill 365 or Senate Bill 479, but I'm here briefly today to describe the importance of agriculture and food processing to the state's economy. Passed out, you should have a little Oregon's agriculture, not just a pretty picture, the other traded sector. I briefly go through this. Overall, the farm gate value of Oregon's production agriculture is $3.8 billion in 2004. Value-added processing contributed another $1.5 to $2 billion. Producers purchased another $3.4 billion in goods and services. You add to that the payroll for jobs connected with agriculture, $2.3 billion. And we estimate that the value to Oregon's economy of agriculture and food processing is about $11.5 billion. I've given you there a list of the top 10 agricultural counties. Marion County, of course, is the largest at $486 million. Just giving you the top 10. There's another sheet there that shows Oregon agriculture as an economic engine. The productivity has grown from about $428 million in 1964 to $3.8 billion in 2004. That's a 788% increase overall, or about 5.61% compounded annually. The employment numbers, more than 150,000 people are employed in agriculture, engaged in various occupations related to agriculture. 8 to 9% of Oregon's employment, one in every 12 jobs, $2.3 billion payroll for agriculture. This is just kind of a little cheat sheet here on what's going on. As far as exports, 80% of the production leaves the state of Oregon, and about 40% of that finds its way to foreign markets. Ag and food products are our second largest export sector in terms of value and first in terms of volume. Agriculture accounts for about 19% of the state's total exports. 60%, fully 60% of the exports leaving the Port of Portland are agriculture related. There's some information there that talks about the computer and electronics industry as our leading export market, $2.3 billion, and shows that agriculture is $754 million, or about 24.7%. Food processing-related exports are about $885 million. Japan, of course, is our number one, followed by China, Canada, and Mexico. The value-added portion, I've got $1.5 billion here. I think Northwest Food Processors and Mr. Yates mentioned $2 billion in a more recent survey that gave those numbers. But it's truly significant, the value-added portion of this. Multnomah County leads Oregon in terms of food processing. Not many people know that, but about 24% of the state's food processors are from Multnomah County. Payroll is about 20%, nearly 20% for the employees. Marion County follows food processing employment. About 16% of payroll comes from Marion County. And we've got some average numbers in there. Average payroll for food processors in Multnomah County, $36,000, a little over $36,000 a year, $26,700 in Marion County. And there's a list there of food processors, the top five counties, as I mentioned, Multnomah County, and the payroll associated with each of them and for the state, to give you an idea how that's distributed. County total agriculture and related industry activity, Oregon's economic contribution towards Oregon's gross state product is second only to high tech. Then I've got some information there on how agriculture stacks up to other industries. It's greater than transportation, lumber, wood products, and so forth. And again, agriculture is the state's second largest traded sector. Many people, I think, don't realize that, but it is true, has been that way for a while. The idea that agriculture is outdated and is not relevant in the state's economy would mean that a lot of other industries' economic impact is also irrelevant. There are a number of challenges facing the bottom line, and some of those have been mentioned here. The consolidation of the food industry as a source for goods worldwide has been a difficult problem. There's problems with invasive species and movement of plant and livestock, some diseases like the sudden oak death syndrome and mad cow. Global issues. And while there's a compression going on here, while it's being more competitive to stay in this business, expenses continue to climb. Fuel, fertilizer, electricity. Labor costs have risen more than 100% from a decade ago and remain the single highest expense for Oregon growers at over $863 million in 2003. Then there are local issues like Measure 37 uncertainties about water and urban growth. But with all that said, agriculture has a number of strengths. The diversity of our crops and production regions, its reputation for quality and innovation in the state. Oregon's recognized for its efforts in sustainability, technology advancement. We have aggressive marketing programs and a strong commodity commission program. We have a major West Coast port facility. And we have the land base, water, and infrastructure to provide these. So can Oregon compete? I'd say Oregon is regaining its strength in agriculture. We see growers are adapting to changes in the marketplace. They are innovating. Many of the commodity prices and the net farm income are up. Ag exports are up. There are new opportunities for niche markets and certifications or programs are coming up. More resources related to conservation efforts are coming from the Federal Farm Bill and from conservation securities programs. and there are new opportunities relating to renewable energy resources. So with that, we can't really imagine Oregon without agriculture, and it's a very important sector and continues to be. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's continue with testimony, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Revenue Committee, my name is Joe Schweinhardt, Associate Oregon Industries. We represent over 22,000 businesses, including over 400 manufacturers. I appreciate this opportunity to be here today. I am here today in support of Senate Bill 365 and 479. You have heard directly from the industry today about their ability to compete in, or their disability in trying to compete in global market environment. Please take notice that the list of the companies affected by this bill are mostly manufacturers, the backbone of Oregon's economy. The food processing business is the third largest manufacturing sector in the state. They are some of the key industries in Oregon's home-based economy. We must support manufacturing, and we must support the jobs it provides. This tax credit is an investment in the state, in the state's economy. This industry will pay large revenues to our state's budget over the next 100 years, or even over a few. It's going to be large revenues. For every dollar spent in manufacturing, remember, there are $6 spent in supporting industries. We already have lost too many of these industries in the past. Think for a minute what the impact would be if we were to lose another 50% of the jobs and the negative ripple impact throughout our economy in Oregon it would have. You have an opportunity to help and support a major sector of Oregon's economy. The benefits far outweigh the cost, and we urge you to pass these bills. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Very, very compelling testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau, and the producers that produce the products that come to these processing facilities. I want to second the comments of Mr. Yates in his closing comments, how this is a partnership, and I want to, in a sense, close the loop on this. We can't exist, agriculture can't exist without the processors. Processors can't exist without us. It's side by side, and all the information that the gentleman here from the Department of Ag provided for you, right on target. We have the same problems as processors do when it comes to wages. We expect to be coming to you with a similar type of bill from the House side relating to indexing the minimum wage and tax credits for that. So just completes that whole loop, put a whole package together. Agriculture, just once again, number two in the state. We need all the help we can get, and this signal that the legislature sends us would be very positive. We'd appreciate that. So again, support Senate Bill 479 and Senate Bill 365. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think you've got pretty strong support in this committee, and we have one more signed up for testimony, I believe, is all. Ralph Groner, would you please come up? Anyone else desiring to testify? Now is your chance. Mr. Groner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Distinguished members of the committee, feel like the lion's den. I just really put down, I'm Ralph Groner with AFSCME, that I'm against. You notice I did only one bill I had questions on, and that was Senate Bill 365, and I'm kind of surprised I'm the only one, but that never has bothered me. My thoughts on agriculture, there may be some sitting on the committee who thinks I have no background in that, except I'm just sitting there remembering how I was elected in Clackamas County when they were closing my Smuckers in my hometown. And I was surrounded by berry fields, and all five of us kids picked strawberries every year because my father and mother didn't have money for our clothes. And that was most of the kids I knew. So we picked berries every year. Then we picked black caps every year. Some don't know what that is. And we picked our beans every year. And if we didn't, we didn't have clothes. And that meant out Gresham and all the Japanese farmers, and that meant in Marion County if we had to pick. I took second place in the contest in the state in picking the most carriers of strawberries to the Weldons. So I have a vast background, but I was elected on an ag issue that no one talks about that did impact, and I don't know that you can cure it here in Oregon, at least alone, so I want to raise the issue. I was elected by arguing with Congress, so I had a berry field where I put on a protest. I was on NBC, ABC, and all the national news. And I protested when Congress said kids under 13, such as my entire family, could no longer pick. So to make it very clear here in Oregon, listening to the experts, the fact of the matter is I argued with Congress, and fortunately I had Wayne Morris at my pick-in. I had Bob Straub as the governor at my pick-in. I had Lessa Coyne and all the Congress, and 90% of the Oregon legislature were there, from the speaker to the president at my pick-in. By the way, I had 500 people show up, and all the profit from the berries picked went to my campaign. And I thought it was a good way to raise money. I only want to comment that that has impacted Oregon, lest we run off and don't think about this, in the fact that the labor cost, and as you know, I am a labor union, but I do not deal with agriculture workers whatsoever. The fact of the matter is those labor costs in those days, if I assume some of the processors were here, because I've heard they were. The fact is we were picking based on what we picked. And today we have migrant labor, just the contrary of what Congress was after. Congress was afraid we were hurting migrant children throughout America, basically in the South. But in Oregon, at least in the Willamette Valley, who was picking were the children of mill workers, like my daddy, and all of us picked and picked and did we pick. And it helped me strong to my life. So my only comment, I'm not against the first bill. I can't equate this to timber. My family were all laid off. The mills closed in Molalla. Every one of my family. I'm from a timber family. All my cousins, all my relatives, and I know this fact that the only people in timber that have survived today, and I have supported the timber industry in front of revenue committees. And the fact of the matter is that they have modernized their equipment, and I've heard they have here in food processing. They had to survive, and boy, are those that did surviving. They're doing wonderful. There was just a wonderful series in the Oregonian on this. So my only thought on this whole thing is, you know, my county, Clackamas, but I picked in Multnomah and I picked in Marion, is now number one, if I understand it correctly, and the experts are here, in nursery growth. We're the number two, as I understand it, in agriculture in Oregon to Marion. I hate that. I'd like to be number one. But my county was strawberries. My county was black caps. My county was beans long before nursery stock. And even if they work for the Department of Ag, they probably haven't been at this as long as I have. The fact is we went nursery stock. We lost our smuckers. We lost our processors. And you could say I'm arguing for these bills.
Starting to wonder what side.
And I don't mind.
He's on the right side.
But I do question whether the taxpayer, when it comes to, I realize there's a limit on the hours, and I also heard Paul testify, and I went and checked the figures on what this 365 costs with your staff. And when I saw a chart, I didn't see $2 million, and that's maybe where I got here. I saw $40 million and as high as $80 million. I went, hold it, that's a heck of a policy decision. Because the fact of the matter is, yes, of course we want to save agriculture, but my county right now with nursery stock, and by the way, if you think Marion County's not heading into nursery stock, somebody here will probably testify I'm wrong, but that's interesting. I drive this county every day, and all the farms I drive home on my way home through Canby and Aurora, except in Marion County, all of a sudden, Garden World and my God, they're all going to nursery stock. And so I'm not sure you really save the industry you're looking to save. I hate to question that. I really do, because I want to help ag. I wanted to as a kid. And I stood up and fought for ag. At that time, I brought together every politician in this state. I was 27. And the fact of the matter is I still will fight for ag because it's so important. Of course it is. But I only question tax credits for salaries, benefits. Because if we're going to do that, I would rather those credits go to what I've supported with the timber industry. Are you going to put in high-tech equipment, which you are in the other bill? I don't mind that. Let's get them up to date. Let's compete. But I'm not sure the taxpayer of this state can ever totally subsidize any industry, be that ag, timber, fishing. All our natural resource industries have been hurt, all three of them. And whether the taxpayer would say back home, if we had a vote on this issue, that they wanted to pay for salaries and they wanted to pay for benefits so that we could keep that industry, I'm not sure they would if you had to say, or would you rather that money go somewhere else? I don't want to comment on where the other else is. But it might be schools, and if you don't like schools, it might be my state police. They've been cut in half over the last 20 years. Or it might be anyone else. And then last, I just say I only have questions on the income side and the benefit side of the taxpayer versus all the other issues. You're well ahead of me on this here. And the only other issue I have, and I doubt they can do it, I have argued in front of House Revenue, not you, for 15 to 20 years that you need a one-page sheet that whenever a company asks for a tax, I call them break. Paul calls them an expenditure. The euphemism, the dysphemism is a break. I have asked that you have a one-page sheet that shows how many employees you hired, how many did you keep, what was your average weight, what were your benefits, and what did this mean to this? I have one. OHSU turned it into me. I've used it all over this building. They've shown how many employees are created through every dollar you contribute to them, be that tax credit or tax break, or a dollar directly out of the general fund on one page, $27 for every dollar contributed. I simply am one who's beginning to say, let's get the most bang for our buck. No one wants to hurt ag, particularly this person. My grandfather is a dairy farmer, and my mother's from the dairy farm, and all of my family grew up in agriculture. So I don't want anyone to think I don't care about, because I really do, ag, but I do question the question of tax credits for salary and benefits. Other than that, I'm fine with it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Comments, questions? Thank you, Ralph. Time has run out for this meeting of the Revenue Committee. I'm going to adjourn the committee. We're going to bring these bills back. We're going to work them. I'm hopeful that we get this done in an expeditious manner. With that, close the public hearing and close the Revenue Committee. Thank you.